But Mother Gauri, this time when she came to Vrindavan, she came to Vrindavan around the time of the New Vrindavan meetings in America. And she came not in the same good consciousness as last time. In other words, last wanting to die. She knew she was going to die, and she wanted to prepare herself for death, and by hearing and chanting and very, very fixed mind. And Krishna made all arrangements for that. Many people would come and read to her, one after another after another. Even gurus were coming to see her. And there was so much facility given to her for a program of hearing and chanting. But somehow or other, she couldn't have been ready to leave her body at that time. And therefore, by some miraculous way, Krishna gave her an apparent cure to her cancer. So much so that she left Vrindavan, convinced that she was well and she was going to go back to the West and do so much more preaching. When she went back, she became the head of the Sankirtan party. She was organized and distributed many, many, many books in the biggest marathon, Christmas marathon there. And she did a great deal of service. At that time, she was thinking that she was better. Then she started to get sick again, and she looked around in America for different people who might be able to cure her and found no relief. So she came back to Vrindavan in some anxiety, hoping that Narottam, who had cured her before, could cure her again. Mother Gauri went to Delhi, and in Delhi, the doctor realized that she was very soon dying. But I don't think they told her very much of that. But they took 2 liters of fluid out of her stomach. That means, fluid means some sort of poisons that had been created by the cancer in her body. And gave her some medicine and sent her back to Vrindavan. So then, this was about, you could say, maybe a month and a half ago, and it was just after this that my relationship with Gauri started to develop. Although she'd been here and I talked to her casually on and off, I hadn't had a very close relationship with her. And I hadn't really wanted to because of the different circumstances at that time, nor had I been able to because I was so busy. So then when she came back from Delhi, sometime after that, her stomach started to swell up. And she started looking as if she was about 7 months pregnant. And at this point, she became even more morose. Every time she ate something, previous to going to Delhi, she was able to eat almost anything, at least in small quantities, even including milkshakes or cheese sandwiches or fancy prasadam with spices and so on. She was eating quite freely and just getting a little discomfort as a result. So she was happy with that. But when she came back, her stomach started to fill up with gas every time she ate anything. And neither was she sure whether it was filling up only with gas, or if it was filling up with poison, or what was going on. So Narottam came to see her, and he told her that the problem was that she had amoebas. So she took some medicine for that. For a few days, she was constantly just passing a little all the time. She was whatever strength she had, she used from going backwards and forwards to the bathroom. Then he gave her some other medicine to stop that, and then she passed nothing, and then the gas or whatever was in her stomach became so painful that it was like a hard, hard, hard football. And I started coming to visit her at that point because Vidya had gone away and Uma, the other girl who was helping with her, was also not available at that time. So thinking, and Jagrupad wasn't here, so thinking that maybe I should make it my duty to spend some time with her, started to visit with her and talk with her. So the first thing I said to her, or one of the first things, was that as far as I could see, it didn't look like she was getting better. And she half-heartedly agreed with that. She had made some plans to go to Bangalore, where Gurupad went, thinking that she'd go down there and take some diet and she'd recover very quickly. And then she wanted to go to England and distribute sets of books. She was always, always thinking of Sankirtan. So then I suggested to her that she should maybe consider that she wasn't going to be able to again leave Vrindavan, and she should start preparing herself for the end. So she was not afraid of that, but she tended still, whenever she got a little strength or she felt a little better, to think that perhaps she was actually getting better. And this tendency to think she was getting better and then think maybe she wasn't was causing her a lot of difficulty. And while she was on the mental platform about her condition, she was also extremely disturbed by the pain. And she began to become a little panicked that if it was so painful now, and I don't know how long more there is, and it was going to be so painful at the time of death, and I don't think I can do it. So her shelter, her alternative was to go to Delhi, because she'd met a nice doctor there. So at different times we discussed the idea, what did I think? I think it was a good idea to go. And finally I said to her that it seemed to me that it was a good idea to go, just to get it out of her mind. And that she should go as soon as possible while there wasn't so much danger of death, because she didn't want to die in Delhi. So she agreed to this. She had me to ring up Chanasundari, or she had Vidya ring up Chanasundari in Delhi, and tell her all the symptoms of her condition and ask if it would be possible for her to come in and see the doctor. And that evening there was a telephone call back from Delhi, and there was some message, but it was given in a very unclear way. So all that I received to tell her was a list of some medicines that she should take, and a bit of an idea that if she wanted to come, better she didn't come, but if she wanted to come, there would be always a room waiting for her. So then she asked me, what did I think? Should she go in that night with Krishangi and Nandarani, or should she go in the morning alone in a taxi? So again, we discussed it back and forth. And for one reason or another, I thought and suggested that perhaps she should go by herself in the morning. It would be less strenuous with Samapriya, who was going to go and stay with her. So after this discussion, she made arrangements to get a car, and she left in the morning for Delhi. Then, 1 hour after she'd left for Delhi, Nandarani arrived in Kashangi's car with the message for Gauri, which was the actual message given by Chanasundari, which was the friend of hers in Delhi who knew this cancer doctor. And the message was that Gauri shouldn't come to Delhi at all, that her health was actually so bad, her condition was so precarious, that she was due, perhaps, to die within that week, and that she should remain in Vrindavan, take this medicine, and if there was any difficulty, she should get in touch with the doctor. And that this chemotherapy, which is some kind of Western treatment for cancer that removes the pain, would not work on Gauri because it was already too late. So this was the message. And by Krishna's arrangement, I was going to Delhi the same day with Nandarani. This was the day that morning Gauri had left Vrindavan. And all the way there I was feeling very guilty, because I was thinking, here, everybody now is worried about whether Gauri will come back, whether she'll die in Delhi, what's happened. And it was more or less my consulting with me and discussing with me on which she decided to go. So I was feeling somewhat guilty that by the strength of my advice she'd even missed this message. And now she didn't even have a choice to decide whether to stay in Vrindavan or not. But somehow I kept thinking that this must also be Krishna's arrangement, because the timing was so unique that by 1 hour she missed this vital message. So I went to Delhi, but I just went about my business. I didn't bother to go and see Gauri or hand on the message. And Nandarani, who had the message, she thought even perhaps it was better that Gauri stay in Delhi if she was afraid of the pain, because it was going to be difficult to die in Vrindavan. There would naturally be more pain and not much medical treatment, so if she was scared, maybe she should stay in Delhi in the hospital. So all in all, we both didn't get involved, but when the message of Gauri's health condition reached the other devotees, the Delhi devotees, they went immediately to the hospital, and they unanimously insisted to Gauri that she should return immediately to Vrindavan, which was no difficulty because she herself had come to the same conclusion. So when she returned to Vrindavan, this was maybe 3 or 4 days after she had gone to Delhi, her whole mentality was different. Now her mind was fixed. She knew that from this point on, she was preparing for death. There was no question of turning back. She told me when I came to see her, she said, now my mind is peaceful, she said, because this is what I've been waiting for a long time. She told me that the hardest part was the waiting, 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 uncertainty. But now she knew that she was definitely on the verge of death. She was feeling very inspired. So the first thing that she did when she got back was she stopped eating anything. And she told them very clearly that she would not take this, what's called the drip. It's when they have like a bottle of water with some sugar and salt in it, and an injection and a little tube and they place this injection in your arm, and then the water goes into your blood system, and it keeps you alive, it keeps you nourished and growing, your body strong, by feeding you intravenously, or that means feeding you without going through your mouth, just feeding you right into the blood veins. So this is what they usually do with cancer patients, and she said that she definitely wouldn't take this. She just wanted to die a natural, peaceful death, just like Prabhupada had done. So as soon as she came back, it also became apparent that she was going to need a lot more treatment, assistance from the devotees, which put us in a lot of anxiety, because now being summer, there's only a handful of ladies here anyway. And each one of us is busy with our own program. I myself with Jai Gurupath, who had gone away for some days at that point, and Vidya with the sari shop and the mukut shop, and all the ladies with something because of the shortage of manpower. And so we were all in anxiety how to cover the responsibility of taking care of Mother Gauri. And she insisted she didn't want anyone to be hired to do it, so that also made it a little difficult. So Vidya and I decided that we would stay there overnight, which was sometimes a bit of an austerity because the room, because she was getting very sick, constantly vomiting throughout the day and the night, was not a very, it didn't have a very auspicious, transcendental feeling to it. I remember one day she told me, laughingly, when she decided actually not to eat for a couple of days and see if that helped, she told me that she had no more desires left in this world. She'd gone back to the West and fulfilled her preaching desires. And she said the only desire she had now was that sometimes while she'd be lying in bed, she'd think of some boiled vegetables or salad that they made in the restaurant in Los Angeles, and she would think that she wished she could go there to have that. And then she'd smile and say, but this just doesn't seem to be a significant enough thing to warrant me staying in the material world. Because, of course, if you have some material desire, you have to stay in the material world. So she said, I'm also trying now to give up this desire, the desire for something to eat. Gauri was unable to chant most of the time prior to her death, but she spent a lot of time hearing. Our relationship became very nice because of our mutual appreciation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. She had arranged, she gave me this tape recorder which I'm now recording on, and requested me to daily make a tape. So I would read one chapter of the Bhagavatam to her, and then take it to her, and she would listen to it on the tape recorder in the hours when she was alone. Days after that, she became so weak that she couldn't do anything. Barely could just drink water. And we were checking all the time with Narottam how long she would live, how long she would live. And finally, I had to go on the Monday to Delhi. This was perhaps on the Thursday. So Narottam came on the Saturday, and he checked her and he said, she will live at least another 15 days, maximum, minimum. He said her heart is very strong and no disease has touched her heart, so she has a long way to go. But Bhagiji, he would come and see her every day or second day. And I was present when he came and he said to me, I think she has only a few more days to go. So the day I went to Delhi on the Monday, I was praying to Krishna that somehow or other I would not miss anything. In other words, that I would not miss if Gauri needed me, or I would not miss the opportunity to see her leave her body. So then, when I got to Delhi, I did a little of the business I had to do, and I was supposed to stay with this girl, Shama Sundari, and she said she had no facility for that. And then I realized that so many things I was supposed to do weren't working out, and I had a strong feeling that Krishna was telling me to get back very quickly to Vrindavan. So I was with Jai Gurupada, and we caught the next train back and had a very uncomfortable ride back, because to go to and from Delhi in one day is almost like being in hell, especially now that it's so hot. But we came back immediately. I got back that Monday night, took rest in the morning after morning program, breakfast. Ratmanjari came over and told me that Narottam had come and said that he thought Gauri would leave that day. And he said, if not that day, then the next day. So I was marveling at how Krishna had made this arrangement and taken care of my desire in this way, and that I would be present for this occasion. So on the Tuesday, I set everything aside because I was already supposed to be in Delhi. And I spent most of the day with Mother Gauri hearing and chanting and talking with her. But by this time, she was not very conscious. And by the evening, around 4, he also said that if she didn't go that night, she'd have a very difficult night. So Raghunath Maharaj came around 4, and he asked us what was happening, and we told him that the doctor had said that Gauri might go that evening. So we decided that from that day until she left, we should have constant kirtan. So he got together everyone in the temple. It was a little premature, but there was a big, big, big kirtan. All the boys, all the brahmacharis, everybody was there for this big kirtan. So when I went out to get some, I've forgotten why I went out for some reason. When I came back, the room was full of people chanting. And Mother Gauri was lying on her back, and she appeared to be unconscious and dying. Narottama told us that you check with your finger her breath coming out of her nostrils, and if this breath turns cold, then that means she has one more hour to live. So regularly throughout the day and the night, we would check her breath. Gauri was lying there, and then after a little time, she also began to vomit, which was always unpleasant to see, but it was very purifying for the devotees to see, because they could see her condition, her discomfort, her real position, without thinking that this was something very light and easy, preparing to die. And then she came somewhat to consciousness, and she asked us to turn her on her side, to move this, to do that. She vomited some more and put something on her head. And it became a little apparent to the people present that she was not in any condition that she was going to die immediately. So as it became 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, and the kirtan was going on, people started to leave because there was no indication that she was leaving right then, and they would have to continue the next day's service. So by about 12 o'clock, everyone had left except myself, Mother Nirakula, who did the proper shows with me in Mayapur, Mother Yasoda, who's the wife of Kaliya Krishna, this Indian devotee from Germany, and her son Kishore is here, the Gurukul, and she and her husband are taking care of the youngest boy's ashram, and Vidya, the four of us are still there, and Uma. And Uma, she's a German devotee, she'd gone already to sleep. The whole time she was very tolerant and always tried to be cheerful. So then I came over to this room, my office room, and I saw I had so many things to do, so I started working, getting this organized to send back with Bala Bala and doing this and doing that. So many things were just all on hold waiting for what was going to happen. So I started working very quickly. And then all of a sudden, Mother Yasoda came running in, and she told me, "You have to come immediately. Mother Gauri is trying to sit up. She's trying to sit up. And every time she tries to sit up, her whole body shakes and she starts to gurgle." Because, of course, her heart was so weak, so near to death, that she had no strength to do anything. So I came running, and on the way, other devotees joined, thinking this might be the end. And again, the whole room filled up with people and kirtan and so on. And when I got in, I said to Gauri, "What are you trying to do? Why are you doing this?" And she said, "Well, actually, I'm just trying to go. I just want to die." And she was thinking that by sitting up, she would die more quickly. So I said to her, "But you can't die before it's time to die. You have a certain amount of breath, and you have to wait for that. So better to try to chant in here, not to try to die." Actually, two days before, when I came in, she told me that she decided to stop drinking water. So I asked her why she decided to stop drinking water, and again, earlier she told me she wants to die. So I said to her at that time too that it seemed to me that to want to die, when Krishna had not made arrangements yet for you to die, was his desire for liberation. But rather than wanting to die, you should want to keep your hearing and chanting very strong. And anything that would disturb your hearing and chanting, you shouldn't do. And I thought that not drinking water would make her situation more painful and more difficult to hear and chant. So I suggested she didn't do that, and she agreed. So she continued to drink water. That same day, this was also again 2 days before she died, Vidya came running to me and told me that this tape, Gauri wants you to get rid of this tape. She says it's impure, this tape of the devotees chanting. Every time Prabhupada chants, she likes it. When a devotee chants, she tells me that's impure, it's impure. And she has asked me to make a tape with only Prabhupada chanting. So I said, but this tape that I made, this is the tape she asked me for. And not only that, there's no part on this tape with only Prabhupada chanting. So I came, I said, I'll speak to her. So I came to her room. So I came and I said, Gauri, what's the problem? And she was, sometimes her mind would go a little bit to become bewildered. So she said to me, this tape is impure. She says, what is this tape? Who's chanting on this tape? She said, where's the tape of Prabhupada? I want the tape of Prabhupada. And I said, but Gauri, this is the tape of Prabhupada. This is the tape that you asked me for. She said, no, this is someone else chanting. And I said, no, listen, this is Prabhupada. So I stopped and we listened and Prabhupada was chanting. And I said, and there isn't any part on the tape that the devotees aren't chanting too. I said, what can we do? We can't make your tape with only Prabhupada, not of this kirtan. And then, as if her mind had turned the other way, she said, oh, no, the devotee's chanting is very nice. She said, I like this tape. This is very nice. And I said, yes, it's a very nice tape, Gauri. This is the tape you wanted for when you were going to leave. She said, yes. She said, I like this tape very much. She said, just don't play that other tape, the other tape you were playing, they were playing, the one that's very impure. So I just laughed, and we just sort of smiled, and she went back into semi-consciousness. She'd sort of come conscious and go back unconscious like that. So then she was, she went back half conscious again, and she was satisfied that this was the tape that she really wanted. Also at that time, she said one day that she saw Lord Chaitanya came to her, and she told Bhagavati that Lord Chaitanya came. She said that. Then she said to Bhagavati, she said, actually, I can see that going back to Godhead is very easy. She said, it's very easy. All we have to do is give up our envy. And when Vidya was there, she was asking Vidya to put cold compresses all over her body. With cold water, putting water on her head, water on her legs, everywhere. And she'd say, please pour water over me, pour water over me. So then she was pouring water on her body, and she said to her, no, not on my body, on me, pour water on me. And Vidya looked at her and she said, me, the soul. And she was like a child, and her eyes went very big, and Vidya said, I think that water is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That's the water for the soul. And Gauri said, yes, but like a little child. And she again became half conscious. So we had little exchanges with her like that were very pleasing. But the general feeling was that she was very strong, and she was very bravely preparing to die. And it was very inspiring. It made me see that one day I was going to die, and one day you were going to die, and one day Jagrupa was going to die, and that the success of our life was simply if we could remember Krishna and chant Hare Krishna at that time, and then go back to Godhead. And this was the whole purpose to everything. And that anything else was second to that. So then on this last day, she went through the night and survived the night. And then she had a difficult time in the early morning. At one point, even in the early morning, before she was trying to sit up, she had asked me to pour buckets. I had a bucket of water. I poured it all over the bed, all over the mattress, all over everything. She had me pouring one cup after another cup or another cup of water all over her body and keeping the fan on to keep that water cool. Then later, she was cold and had a sleeping bag over her. The bed, of course, was all wet and everything was, but in the heat of in India, everything somehow slowly seemed to dry. So then later on the second day, that was the Wednesday, Narottam came at about 11. And when he came, he remarked that actually it was amazing that she was still in her body. And he said that she would not last another day. She would go within that day. That she had not very long left. He said her heart couldn't make it much longer. So he said he'd come again at 4. He said 4 or 5 hours, he said 11 o'clock. He said she had 4 or 5 hours left, and that then he'd be there at 4 to see how she was doing. So this time there was a very big kirtan going on, and the sannyasi Mataji was sitting next to Gauri, and she was shaking her body and trying to see if she was still alive in a not very, very gentle way. In fact, it was very funny. The night before, Gauri was lying there, and he appeared to be completely unconscious. And the sannyasi Mataji said, just see, she's dead, in Hindi, because she's an old Hindi lady. And he started shaking her arm and pushing her body. And all of a sudden, Gauri opened her eyes and said, would you give me a break? And we almost all started laughing, because it was so funny, because she was so much apparently dead. And the sannyasi Mataji didn't understand, and she started shaking her more, and all of a sudden Gauri opened her eyes fully and said, stop bothering me! And then she again closed her eyes as if she was dying. So we all sort of laughed, and we tried to arrange that the sannyasi Mataji didn't personally come around Gauri because she was a little rough. But the next day again, she was there, as I was saying, first, and trying to check if she was dead, and she wanted to put some Ganges water in her mouth and put tilak in her mouth, so many things. So finally, Dhanada Maharaj came over to me and he said to me, it's your responsibility to preach to her and make sure she remembers Krishna at the time of death. So then I said to him, it would be much easier if the sannyasi Mataji wasn't here. And she couldn't hear me, and neither did she speak English. But almost exactly at that moment, as if by Krishna's arrangement, she stood up and left without any communication between the two of us. So then I moved closer to Gauri and I started to tell her, you have to chant, don't forget Krishna, and so on. And the one thing I would tell her most was that I heard on a tape the Prabhupada had said that if you chant Hare Krishna at the time of death, you won't feel any pain. So I didn't myself, in one sense, have faith in this, because I was thinking, how can you not feel pain at the time of death? But I felt very strongly about it because I had heard Prabhupada directly say this on a tape. So I constantly would tell her this, if you chant Hare Krishna, you won't feel any pain. If there's any pain, you have to chant. And she would agree and appreciate it to hear it, and even in semi-consciousness. But she still wasn't chanting because of the pain. Then, at a certain point, she asked again to sit up. So I arranged for her to sit up. And this time again, her whole body started to go into a shaking and gurgling, and it appeared that she was going to leave at that point. And when we laid her down again, her heart was again very, very weak, and it looked like her mouth was moving in the way that one's mouth moves towards the end of one's breathing period. And when she came conscious again after that, she started to, a very funny thing, she started smiling at myself and Vidya, who was sitting on either side of her and trying to preach to her. And we got some pictures of Prabhupada that were all pasted on the walls around her room. I said, take down all the pictures, and we took down all the pictures and we showed them to her one after another. And she'd look at the picture and she'd look at us and look at the picture and look at us, and she had a big smile on her face, but you could see in her eyes that there was a lot of fear. And she would be trying to move her mouth. It was almost like the smile was not real. It was just the way her muscles were stretched at that point. And then all of a sudden, with this big, funny, funny smile on her face, it would make you laugh, it was such a big smile. She said in a kind of a very hard, tense voice, why am I in this position? Why am I in this position? And then at first I was afraid, and I said to her, well, Gauri, it's only a couple more, it's only another few hours, Narottama said, and we just have to tolerate it. But then I realized that actually she was a good enough devotee to preach to her very strongly. So I said to her, you're in this position because you've been sinful, and you've got a material body, and anyone who gets a material body has to be put in this position before they die. So don't be angry at Krishna for being in this position, just accept it and tolerate it. And she seemed to accept that answer. And then I started telling her, and Vidya also, about all the things, different things that we remembered that she'd done. And I was saying, do you remember, Gauri, all the books that you distributed, and all the times you helped devotees, and all the things you did? And we were trying to think of anything you could tell her like that. And this seemed to pacify her, and her mind became a little peaceful. And then we were telling her how, you know, when Prabhupada left, he chanted, and you have to chant because you want to set an example. And we told her, there's so many devotees that have come here. And then she tried to look around the room and see all the devotees that were there. And then she said, who's here? Tell me who's here. So we told her each person's name and who they were and why they'd come to see us. All the Gurukul boys, or the Maharajas, the Muslim Mukut workers from the workshop had come in to see her. Different cooks from the kitchen had come to see this lady die because they'd heard that she was a very advanced devotee. And constantly, like, members were coming in, people were coming in, and they were very impressed to see her. So we told her about this, and she was very pacified by that. And seeing as it appeared that again she wasn't immediately going to leave, gradually most of the people again left. And there was a little peaceful period around 2 o'clock in the afternoon where I went and took a little prasadam, and Vidya started speaking to Gauri. And at that time she started speaking to her very gently, and Gauri was a little conscious, quite conscious. And she started preaching to her about how she had to chant, that she had to set this example for the other devotees, that her whole life had been an example, and now she had to set this perfect example at the time of death. And I found quotes in Prabhupada's book. We read to her how Prabhupada left his body. We showed her pictures of Prabhupada through his time, and she was very happy to hear. And then we read to her how the Sankirtan devotees are guaranteed to go back to Godhead. And many, many different quotes like this. And I was looking up different quotes in different books that we were reading to her. And then, after a little time, the videos talking and the reading, she actually began to try to chant, which was very wonderful, because she had so little energy left, and she was so close to the end. And it was most amazing, because as she started to chant, all the pain, all the difficulty seemed to go away. And instead of feeling unhappy, she began to look and appear very peaceful, and was constantly smiling. And just smiling and smiling and chanting and smiling, but without any pain or fear in her eyes. Then when Narottam came to see her, this was around maybe 4 o'clock, he said, this woman is seeing God. He said, otherwise, how could she smile like this? She is fully happy, he said, pointing to her. She has no difficulty. She's not experiencing pain. She's fully happy. So then at that point, he wanted to turn her around so she could see her deity, beautiful Radha Krishna deity. But instead, we decided to keep her where she was and bring the deities down to her. So even Krishna in his deity form, he appeared right in front of her bed. Krishna came to her, and his beautiful deities in their beautiful clothes were placed beside her. Then she lay there again, trying to chant. We're showing her pictures and the deities there beside her, but no fear in her face and no apparent pain. And Narottam stayed for a little while, and the kirtan became very strong, and more and more members of the community came. By this time, she was lying on the mattress. Her mattress was on the ground, so the devotees were surrounding her all around and chanting. And it was very wonderful. Then she was smiling, and we were talking, and she was chanting a little bit, little bit, little bit, and we were encouraging her and speaking to her and chanting with her. And up to about 5 minutes before she left, and all of a sudden, even without the breath turning cold or even without any of the normal symptoms of death, around 5:30, 5:45, she started to become semi-conscious again. Then one of the girls said, give her some Ganges water. So we placed some Ganges water in her mouth. And it was almost as if the Ganges water actually, she couldn't swallow it. And she started to gently and not painfully choke on the water. And the heart again started to stop. And the breathing went into the last final stage, the pre-death stage, where the heart is very, very slow and the tongue is moving backwards and forwards on each breath. And her eyes start to turn upwards. So this last stage occurred, and the kirtan became extremely intense. Again, this last stage occurred, and the kirtan became extremely intense. And I was sitting on one side with my hand on her heart, and chanting to her, and Vidya was on the other side with the tulsi leaf, and I had the Ganga water. And at a certain point, I noticed for at least 30 seconds, her heart completely stopped. So I immediately placed the water in her mouth. But then, her tongue moved again one last time, just a little flicker. And then Maharaj said to me, she hasn't gone, don't put any more water in her mouth. But I could tell by her heart that actually it would stop pumping. So I told him, it stopped. And in that time where we couldn't decide if she had died or not, actually that little flutter was the soul leaving the body. And it was so peaceful, and it was so transcendentally done. There was a huge kirtan all around, and everything was so auspicious. But everyone felt certain that actually Mother Gauri had gone back to Godhead. And then the kirtan became so ecstatic, and we placed the tulsi leaf in her mouth. And by this time, when one dies, if you don't close the eyes and the mouth very quickly, they remain in open position. This also happened with Srila Prabhupada, because it took a few minutes to determine if he had died. So with Gauri, we tried to close immediately her eyes and mouth, but already they were somewhat open. So he placed a cloth underneath her chin and tied it around her head to close her mouth, which is what had also been done with Srila Prabhupada. And then everybody left the room and we prepared to bathe the body. So 3 or 4 ladies stayed. Her body was still warm and she looked very, very, very beautiful. And we took her and bathed her body. Then we dressed her in new clean cloth. And everyone all over the temple was running around preparing for the funeral. We got all the different paraphernalia together, and Kimon went to the bazaar and got the wood and got the stretcher and brought everything back. And the ladies all prepared her body, replaced fresh tilak on her, wrote Krishna's names and sandalwood pulp on her body, and dressed her in a white sari and covered her head. And then we waited, preparing to take her to be burned. And in this time, one thing that we noticed was extraordinary was that one old sadhu, an old babaji, came to the door, which was unusual because we did not know him, and there was no reason for him to come. And he came in, he wanted to come in, and he came in, very saintly looking old man. And he looked around, and in Hindi he asked, has somebody died in here? And we said yes, and he came over and he looked at, saw the head was covered, but he saw there was a body, and he paid some respect and then he left. Later, Kaliya Krishna told us that there are two auspicious symptoms that you can tell if a person has gone back to Godhead. And the first one is if a Brahmin immediately approaches the body. So we felt very confident that actually that was what had happened, because of the presence of this elderly gentleman inspired by Super Soul to come at this particular moment.